Hello and welcome, Vashon and Mori Island and all the ships at sea. This is History Worth Hearing, a presentation of the Vashon Heritage Museum, and I am your host, Chris Austin. We have an interesting show for you today. We have two guests, Jeff Hoyt and Billy Joe Hills, and they are participants in the gala fundraising event that will be held on April 22nd, which I hope you have already purchased your ticket. They're going pretty fast. And later on in the show, we'll have Dr. Bianca Perla, and she'll be talking about the latest Vashon 101 lecture, which is very interesting about current ecology on the island. So without further ado, on with the show. Okay, listeners, as promised, we're going to talk a little bit about the fundraiser that the museum is having. Very important to our operations over there. It is called the Celebrate Our Heritage Fundraising Gala, and it takes place on Saturday, April 22nd, and it offers a look at the 1920s Vashon. It's going to offer a family-style dinner, as well as dancing and memorabilia. And we've got my two guests today are participating in it, and they've graciously given up their time today to do a quick interview. I'll introduce her first. He's my boss at the Voice of Vashon, so I got to get to him first. And his accolades are, he is Jeff Hoyt, and he is a voice actor who has made a career off his dead-on impression of voice actor Jeff Hoyt. In other words, he gets paid mostly for being himself, but he can at least also do a passable impression of a 1926 Vashon newspaper editor. Welcome, Jeff.
Hey, Chris. Good to see you and hear you.
Yeah. Our other guest is Billy Joe Hills, and he is the founder, frontman, and flaming trumpeter for Seattle's Dusty 45. Welcome, Billy Joe.
Howdy, Chris.
So, I love the flaming trumpeter.
Well, that's what everybody knows me for, so embrace it.
Now, Billy Joe, you were here on the island recently for the VCA, the Buddy Holly story.
That's right.
And so well received. Thank you.
Yeah, loved it.
And Jeff, I you were the glue that held it together, correct?
Well, I was the DJ in 1950s Lubbock, Texas, who kind of narrates the story, kind of comes in half dozen times or so to take you to the next stage. But it was so great for me is that I had this wonderful like vantage point on the side of the stage where I could just kind of watch Billy Joe do his thing. And I didn't have to move, dance, sing, play, anything. It was glorious.
Wow. I saw you striking a pose over there, Jeff. A couple times. No. You definitely did it. Absolutely pro job. Your job is so important to that play. I did it, you know, at the Fifth Avenue, and they had another great actor who did that role, in Seattle. But I have to say, you're right on par. Vashon is lucky to have you.
Well, thanks.
That's true.
Always a DJ. Ever a DJ, always a DJ.
So now you're expanding your genre from 1950s to 1920s for this gala. How is that going to work? I mean, how do you like practice for that?
Well, basically, the story of the 1920s that I'm going to be depicting is that back in 1926, the Vashon newspaper editor, P. Monroe Smock, which is a name and a half.
And his wife, Agnes, right? Wasn't that his wife, Agnes Smock?
I don't remember what his wife's name was.
He became editor after him.
Yeah. He left the island. He was quite a character. He was kind of like the Music Man, you know. We got Trouble in River City, that guy. He was kind of a huckster. And he was always trying to figure out a way to make some money. And one of the ways that he was losing money was that Vashon was bleeding residents. They were leaving in droves because there was an agricultural depression going on. And he had this idea, what if I went on the radio in Seattle and sold Vashon, sold all of its virtues, and got everybody excited about it, encouraged people to respond with letters to the editor, and maybe they would come out and look it for land, and maybe we could turn the tide. And so he partnered with a Seattle radio station and basically bought an hour of ad time on the station, which, and since he was also giving away prizes and encouraging feedback, this is, as far as I can tell, the first infomercial in the history of broadcasting.
Really?
Yeah. They say infomercials didn't start until the 40s, but this was 1926, and this was an infomercial. I mean, he was selling Vachon. He was encouraging feedback. He's giving away prizes. It was all the things that you need for an infomercial. And he brought singers and songwriters over from the mainland, or from Vachon, to sing at this radio station. And it was an hour of early century prose that you just have to hear it to believe it. And when Mike Suddeth, who's on the Heritage Museum board, gave me this speech like 15, 16, 17 years ago, I can't even remember when, I became obsessed with figuring out a way to perform it on stage. And so at the fundraiser, we're going to perform a piece of it, like 15 minutes. And then in October, we're going to do the whole thing, the whole full hour with singers and songwriters performing. And I'm talking to a lot of people. It's going to be quite a production.
Oh my God.
The Heritage Museum is the sneak preview.
And Billy Joe, how do you prepare for something like this? I think 1920s, I'm assuming, is not your genre.
First of all, I'm curious. Did you say they're going to have singers and songwriters as well, Jeff?
Yeah.
From the local Vachon?
Yes.
Oh, that's awesome. And I had one other question before I get to there. Does Smock have any relatives still on the island?
Yes. Mike Suddeth.
Yeah, well, Mike Suddeth is his grandson. He's the guy who gave me the speech in the first place.
Cool.
And he'll be one of the guests because the way we're going to do this is we're going to have a 1926 radio set for KFOA, Seattle. And then we're also going to, on the other side of the stage, have a modern day Voice of Vachon set.
Awesome.
And whenever I toss to the center of the stage for performers to sing songs from the original program of the 1926 show, I'll dip back behind and go to the other side and have a contemporary conversation as myself, Jeff Hoyt,
right,
with Bruce Hallman, the island historian, or Mike Suddeth, grandson of P. Monroe Small.
Wow, really awesome.
Yeah, it's gonna be great.
There's no one left with that name Smock anymore that you know of.
Yeah, no, not that I know of. But
I love the name.
We're definitely going to try to find some other relatives of P. Monroe. He was quite a character.
Yeah. Well, Chris, I guess to prepare, it's kind of already, you know, we're kind of purveyors of Americana, the band. That's always been my thing, is to really kind of embrace all the music that kind of made rock and roll. So everything that came up before Buddy Holly, which was, you know, like early like Dixieland jazz, you know, which is one of my Louis Armstrong kind of, he came about in the 20s with his cool little five piece and seven piece bands. So that kind of stuff is kind of like at my very core of who I am in a sense. But then, you know, I got influenced by all kinds of stuff growing up back there in the Southern Illinois, you know, like I heard a lot of old honky tonk and then Southern rock as a kid and stuff like, so I was always curious in like the blues and the roots.
Sure.
So that's kind of what we do already, but I'll probably accent a little bit more of that, especially in the earlier part of the program where people are coming in and hanging out. We're going to do like a set before, I think as people are arriving, we're going to be doing a set. And so I'll have a little more of that kind of jazz and that 20s era vibe.
Kind of Delta blues out of Memphis.
A little bit of that, but mostly, you know, we're not a cover band. So, you know, it's just, I've written a lot of songs that have kind of a 20s feel to it. So I'll do some of those. And I'll do maybe a little Louis Armstrong, like Basin Street blues and stuff like that in the early part of the show. And then, you know, after the auction and dinner, I think we're just going to play a rock and party set, which is going to be still our vintage.
Yeah.
Five. You know, you're not going to have to do your flapper dance all night long.
That's good.
That's
nobody needs to see my flapper dance.
So when you are playing like a 1920s era, will you use instruments from that period?
Well, we're not completely changing up our instrumentation. It's just more stylistically how you play.
Oh.
You know, we do have a stand-up bass, which was used then. You know, that's just our thing. Trumpet hasn't changed much at all.
True.
And drums haven't either. You know, it's just about the approach, you know, the instrumentation and, you know, and like I said, all the guys are kind of purveyors of roots music. So it's not, It's not a big stretch for us.
Well, is there a, for this is a question for both of you, is there a dress code you need to adhere to for this? Like a,
I think 20s dress is encouraged.
Like spats, or I don't know what 20s dress is, really.
I don't know either. I'm going to wear a tux. I mean, I figured that's timeless.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Yeah, and we'll just, like I said, same thing with the, we can kind of merge our style a little more towards that, but we're not going to come out and just completely change into like, you know, gangsters and
zoot suits.
Actually my bass player, I might get him to wear a flapper dress. We'll see. But no.
Well, what else should we know about your performance? Well, I guess I should have said something.
Okay. All I'm saying is we're going to have fun. We love Vashon. We got a great connection with there. You know, I know it is a 20s themed thing, and we're all going to kind of create that vibe with Jeff and the other performers. And, but we're going to have fun. It's going to be a rocking fun party because that's what we do.
Well, my job will be to encourage everyone there once we do this little 15-minute sample of It's Vashon Isle. That's the name of the show. I'm going to be begging people to tell everybody they know to come out in October because I'm on the hook for this show. And if it loses money, I've got to pay it back. So, so I am going to enlist everybody who attends and say, you need to come back in October for the full show and you need to bring everyone you know from on and off island. Please, God, don't let me lose money on this show.
So do you know where it's going to be held in October?
I think it's going to be at VCA in October.
Wow.
The fundraiser is at Open Space for Arts and Community.
Yeah.
We're doing the big show in October. And it'll be the weekend of October. It's mid-October, like 13 through 15, something like that. There'll be four performances. And man, I have got it. I am so pumped about this. I've been thinking about this for so long. And I just think it's cool. It's a cool show because it's about us. It's about our island. And it's also delivered in this glorious kind of prose from that era. You want to hear just a paragraph or two?
Yeah, absolutely.
All right. Well, this is P. Monroe Smock from 1926. One of the greatest assets of Vashon Island is its equable climate. During the past so-called winter, not one flake of snow was seen. And children here are old enough to talk who do not know what snow even looks like. We are not awakened nights by the sound of thunder, nor the flash of lightning. Children born here have to go east to find out what songs the mosquito sings, and fly swatters are not sold in our local stores. High school graduates aren't puzzled about the spelling of such words as cyclones and earthquakes, as both words are known here only as a tradition. Malaria and typhoid never cross the sound to our island. Everywhere there is an abundance of pure, cold spring water. And today the town of Vashon opened up a community water system, which will bless generations yet unborn. There are two kinds of stock that is far below par on Vashon Island. The one is stock in an undertaking establishment, and the other is stock in a padlock factory. We seldom have need of the former, and we never have need of the latter. You'll find no padlocks on our doors. When we leave the island to visit a sick relative back east, we never lock the door. When we return from our trip, nothing has been molested, excepting some obliging neighbor has mowed the lawn or perhaps arranged fuel in the fireplace ready for us to kindle.
Wow.
The whole thing is like that.
You can't make that up. That is so great.
It's a blueprint for timeshare.
Yeah.
Holy cow.
He is pumping the island hard.
As people still do. So it's I love that. And everybody lives there loves their island. And so he's still with you.
Yeah.
Well, gentlemen, I know you're going to be wonderful. I can't wait to see it. And for listeners, it's April 22nd. Please.
April 22nd.
And thank you both for taking the time to do this interview. I appreciate it.
Absolutely, Chris. Thank you.
All right, listeners, as promised, we have a special guest here. This is Dr. Bianca Perla, and she is the executive director.
I'm now a co-director, so I'm the science director of
Vashon
Nature Center.
Spanish?
Maria is my co. Maria Mettler is my co-director now.
Oh,
she's
really?
The education director.
Oh,
the new development this year.
Okay, well, great. Congratulations to you both.
Yeah.
And you are going to be talking April 13th at 7 p.m. on the Vashon 101 series sponsored by the museum. And your topic is contemporary ecology. Is that correct?
Mm-hmm.
What does that mean? Like we had that.
Chickens, dogs, coyotes.
Domestication. No. like we had Tom.
No, actually, none of those. I'm not going to touch on any of those. I mean, contemporary ecology is a huge, huge topic that you can't, you know, really even crack into in 45 minutes. But what I'm going to do is just give some windows into some of the themes that have been talked about in the class already. So, okay. And some of the questions that have come up for students of the class, I'm going to try to touch on. So I'm just going to look at ecology is just the inner study of the interrelationship between species and between species and their environment. And so, you know, how do things relate? How do things connect across ecosystems between, you know, species and also adding humans to that equation because we're part of nature as well. So I'm going to be looking at those relationships between living things on the island and between living things and their environment in kind of three windows. We're going to look at forests. So, you know, and that brings in the thread of geology started with Tom and Steve, because a lot of our forest patterns on the island were set down by the geology and the different soils that were given to us by the glaciers. So going through those interrelationships, how forests have changed through time, how humans have entered that equation. And then we're also going to look at fish, tying into Bina McLeod's talk on the fish wars. We'll look a little bit into salmon and also herring. And then we'll also look at kind of just the fringes of the island, the shorelines, and how important those are in terms of connecting the ecology of Vashon to the wider Salish Sea.
So
that's kind of the outline.
So we had Tom DeFries on a couple of shows ago, and his talk was History of the Ecology of the Island. So is there like a demarcation where his lecture ends and yours begins, or no?
Yeah, basically people.
those I've heard
so,
of.
So yeah, I'm taking kind of the what some people are calling the Anthropocene now.
Yeah, I've heard that. Yeah.
So the time of where we really enter the equation as you know, species that really influence on a wide scale a lot of the ecosystem processes and biodiversity of the area. So
So I first heard you lecture at the last Vashon 101 about what, over 10 years ago, I think.
Yeah, a long time ago.
Is your lecture?
My talk has completely changed.
I was going to ask you, what has changed?
That's the problem. If you do geology and you do like, you know, Tom and Steve get off easy, man.
Yeah, they're gloating about it. Yeah. The slides from 30 years ago are still relevant. But what's the big change?
Well, there's just been a lot of change in our understanding of how ecosystems function, you know, in just that short amount of time. And there's also been a lot of change in our understanding of how much humans are impacting those ecosystems. Just, you know, just in that last 10 years, we've got a lot of new information.
Have we gotten that new information?
Well, I think there's been a big push, for example, in the, you know, climate change science to really document what's happening in the atmosphere and what, you know, how humans are contributing to that and how natural areas fit in both as carbon sinks and, you know, remediation. And so there's a lot more information now, and we're a lot farther down the path too than we were the last time Vashon 101 was held. So that's one difference. We're seeing a lot more just every day. People are seeing a lot more differences that we can point to that are connected with climate change around us. So that's one big one. We know a lot more, and there's been a lot more change in the way that we manage natural systems, where, you know, many years ago, it was more put things in protected areas and hopefully they'll be safe. And now we're realizing that because of all these interconnections between lands, and because species use both protected areas and places where, you know, we don't have those protections, that there's, we need a different approach in terms of conservation and management of those areas. So there's been a lot of differences in terms of understanding, for example, what salmon need and how connected salmon are to the so many different ecosystems. Back in the, you know, 90s, early 2000s, there was a real big push for riparian restoration, so streamside restoration, because we knew that streams were really important to salmon. Now we're finding out that the nearshore environment, the beaches, and you know, that area are really important for salmon. And so there's been a lot of extra research and understanding about the links, you know, once salmon leave the system of the streams, they spend a ton of time, especially in terms of Vashon, they spend a lot of time along our shorelines feeding and growing bigger before they go into the ocean. And that was something that we didn't really get 10 years ago, really, even in terms of, I mean, some people did, but in terms of more public understanding, we've got salmon that forage along our shorelines from as far away as the Stillaguamish River. So we have, you know, we're a huge magnet for forage, for fish foraging for salmon in terms of Vashon. So there's lots of changes just in our understanding of how we're connected to these species.
You think that we're a magnet because relative to other places, we don't have as much armored beaches as
Yeah, well, we actually have 50% of our shoreline is armored here on Vashon, pretty close to. But yeah, for the central Puget Sound, which is mostly King County, we have most of the unarmored shoreline here on Vashon as habitat for, you know, what's left. So that does make a big difference. But possibly even before shoreline armoring happened, we were still a big resource, because we're, you know, we're this big spot of 54 miles of shoreline right in the middle of the Puget Sound.
Oh, I see.
You know, so likely was a magnet for a long time.
I see. So have you seen in the last 10 years an increase in funding for research? Are people getting it that we need money to find out all these important things, or has it been stable?
Yeah, I mean, I think there's more funding for certain things. You know, there's still a big lack of funding in general for all the issues that need to be solved or need to be looked into more or understood better. But you know, salmon, for example, there's a lot of funding that's being put there. And then we have the whole Puget Sound Vital Signs program, which really created all of these different, you know, different vital signs for health for the Puget Sound. And not all of them are nature related. Some of them are social indicators as well. But those, that was a huge process that we went through in Puget Sound and really nailed, you know, some super important things like forage fish and shoreline health and kelp. And so when things are prioritized in those Puget Sound vital signs, they are getting more money than they had in the past, which is great, because it's increasing our understanding a lot more of those vital signs, and they're all important.
Yeah, and I'm sure, you know, more understanding begets more understanding, and it just kind of builds on itself. And interesting. So you said you were going to talk about, you've touched on the salmon, also the forests. What can you tell us? Are they good?
I don't want to give everything away.
Okay. We want to whet their appetites.
You know, general forest patterns, when you go through, when you walk or bike or drive from the south end of the island to the north end of the island, or you drive out to Maury, you can see there are differences you know, in our forest. The South tend to have lots more Douglas fir. They're drier. North, you get to Shingle Mill area where you have more cedars. Over in Maury Island, we have big, extensive Madrone forests, some of the biggest in the state that still live, that are still here. And so we'll talk about why that is. Why do we have such diversity on such a small island, and what contributes to that? So we'll go through that a little bit. People have also, a big question came up after Tom DeVries' talk about fire and the role of fire in Vashon's history. And so I'll go into that a little bit too. And that's super interesting, looking at historical fire regimes and then also looking at what's going to happen in the future in terms, or what's predicted in terms of global warming, and how that might change our fire cycle a little bit. So,
oh my gosh. I mean, you hear the horror stories of, you know, all these forests drying out because of the higher temperatures and becoming tinder and pipes. Okay. Well, that's going to be interesting. So I guess I'm pretty average in the sense that, you know, you hear these stories about climate change and ecology, that it's all seems to be kind of gloom and doom. And it kind of makes, like, as an individual person, what can I do?
Yeah. I agree. It's very overwhelming. but
will you touch on
I
that?
Hope to speak to that a little bit too. I'll give some ideas in terms of homeowners here on the island, some resources for how that they can care for their land. And I think really there is a fundamental shift that is happening in our understanding of our place in the world. So we'll talk a little bit about that and, you know, kind of follow, you know, what is our niche as a human species, and how do we live that niche in a way that's sustainable for us, right, as humans, so that we can continue to survive, because we have a lot of tipping points that are happening in these, you know, in these life support systems on Earth. And so we need to figure it out. It's one of the biggest challenges, I think, of the 21st century, is figuring out how we can live. And that's on a there's a lot of different scales that need to change. You know, there is the personal scale, but then there's also the political, you know, higher organizational scales, all the way up to global. And so we'll talk about that a little bit. But I think there's a lot of really cool stuff that's going on that gives me hope. And I really think, you know, just in terms of my work with Vashon Nature Center, the people that I meet every day give me hope. All the volunteers, you know, Bina McLeod in her talk mentioned that a little bit when somebody said, what can we do? She said, keep taking the care of the earth like you guys are on Vashon, you know, because we're doing a good job here on Vashon. And I'll show some of the data that we've collected over. Now we have a, you know, 20 year time span for some of this monitoring data that shows that some of the restoration stuff that we're doing in the streams and on the shorelines are working. You know, so we're actually turning those downward curves around. And so that, you know, on a small local scale gives me a lot of hope, because I know it's happening in other communities across the Puget Sound as well. So,
well, you think the fact that we're an island contributes to that kind of husbandry of the island, because, like, we're it, you know?
Mm-hmm. I do think that islanders tend to have an innate sense of limited resources that people maybe in more mainland or urban environments don't have, you know, because we can see where, you know, where our little spot of land ends. And so that island mentality does give us more of an intuitive sense of that nature does have limits,
right?
I guess, you know, we have a sole source aquifer. We have shorelines where our, you know, forests, and we, yeah, so definitely.
It seems to me that systems in nature can put up with a lot of abuse, and then they fall quickly.
Yes.
Not a gradual decline, like, whoa, we better fix this. It's like, we're done with this.
Yeah. And that was really, you know, that's really a new understanding in science and systems theory that really didn't get ingrained until the 90s, where we were, you know, we were treating all of these systems as linear systems, and they're not linear systems. And that's what you're talking about there. Many, I mean, some things are, but most things in ecosystems are big, you know, systems that have positive feedback loops that keep them in a certain state until you start breaking those. And that's what scientists call tipping points, you know, and then you can fall into another state that has a whole other set of positive feedback loops that keep it in that state. So one example would be eutrophication of a lake, or the dead zones in Hood Canal, where, you know, you have a lot of buffering going on that's allowing that that estuary or that lake to take a ton of nutrients, and nothing's really happening and no changes are being seen. And then all of a sudden you hit a threshold that brings, you know, gets that algae up to a certain rate where they're, you know, kind of overwhelming the system and overwhelming other positive feedbacks. And then you get this eutrophication state that is stable and it's hard to get out of.
Yeah. Well, that was my next question. How easy to recover, and not so much.
It's much harder to recover in, it takes a lot more effort to get back over the hump into that former state. Once you've tipped it.
Was an ounce of prevention worth a pound of cure? Or...
Mm-hmm. I mean, our own human bodies are complex systems too, right? So we have the same types of things happening to us. That's why it's hard to get over addiction, and it's hard to, you know, get diets to work, and, you know, all sorts of things. We're exactly like the earth in terms of not being nonlinear, complex systems.
Well, that makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
Well, great. Well, what else can you tell us about the talk? I mean, I don't want you to give it away.
Yeah. No, I guess I just, the last thing to say would be, I encourage people to come with questions. I'm going to try to keep a good amount of time open, because there's no way that I can touch on every single subject. So, you know, if you have a burning question that you want to ask, I'm hoping to have some sort of a, you know, discussion and question and answer at the end time for that. So I'd encourage people to think about that beforehand if they want to come for things.
Well, my question as always is, how is our meso predators doing?
Yeah, they seem to be doing fine. Are you talking about our coyotes?
Coyotes,
which
raccoons.
There's also raccoons that could be considered meso predators. Yes.
I remember that.
Yeah, the raccoons seem to be declining, probably because of the coyotes. I don't know. We've noticed we got a few wild cam shots this summer of coyotes running through the woods with big raccoons in their mouths. So
wow,
we finally got to answer that question about whether they're competing.
Oh my goodness. Gotta bring that up. That's really interesting.
Yeah.
Okay. Anything else?
Great. No, thanks for having me on.
Oh, of course. And listeners, it's April 13th at 7 p.m. Sign up for free at the museum website. And it's going to be great. I've heard Bianca lecture many times, and they're always interesting. So thank you very much for doing this.
Yeah, sure. No problem. I like talking about this stuff. I always learn stuff too. Putting these things together. So, all right. Thanks, Chris.
Before we go, I'd like to list our Bash on 101 talks. The very first one was by Steve Bergman, and that was on the geology of the island. And that is available to view on the website, BashonHeritageMuseum.org. And the second one is Tom DeFries, and it's the ecology, the past ecology of the island, which is another fascinating topic. Talk number three is Fishing War Survivor with Bina McLeod. She is the Director of Student Success and Culture at Chief Lecce Schools. She will host this talk on Zoom about the 1970s fish wars, a struggle for tribal fishing and environmental stewardship rights in the Salish Sea. Talk number four is contemporary Vashon ecology. That's with Dr. Bianca Perla. Modern ecology examines what we know and don't know about the current wildlife, plants, and ecosystem trends on Vashon Island. She'll address questions like, why are madrone forests common on Maury and not on the North End? How are salmon populations faring? And many other questions. Vashon 101 Talk Number 5 explores the Shwabops, or Swiftwater people of Vashon. The speaker is Brandon Rainin. Brandon is the director of Tribal Historic Preservation Office and Historic Preservation Department. Talk Number 6 is from none other than Vashon Heritage Museum President, Dr. Bruce Hallman. Bruce will examine the major turning points that have shaped human history on the island in an effort to understand how and why Vashon Maury Island has become the social, political, and economic place it is today. And talk number 7, Vashon Demography, A Picture of Us, is presented by Dr. Alice Larson. Vashon Demographics will present a picture of who lives on the island today. This will come from available information that will explore population numbers, ages, race, ethnicity, family characteristics, economics, living situations, employment, and so forth. And the last lecture, talk number 8, Improving Vashon Through Exploring Connection. And this is presented by Dr. Patrick Christie. Patrick will act as a respondent for each talk and will work with Vashon 101 participants to identify themes and cross currents that link the various topics and presentations in the 7th and final session. So there you have it, a very exciting series of lectures and one that a lot of people have put a lot of work into. So I hope you'll take time to enjoy it. And I hope you've enjoyed this presentation of History Worth Hearing. And until next time, take care.